You can self-nominate.
I'll re-nominate Janet.
I'll second. Are there
other nominations? If not, Janet Brennan has been nominated to be chair. All those in, well, we need to take a roll call. All those in favor.
Let me go ahead and do a roll call.
Right.
Please answer yes or no to the nomination of Janet Brennan as 2021 chair. Someone get all the names. Alan Stroh.
Yes.
Bob Smith.
Yes.
Janet Brennan.
Yes.
Davis.
Yes.
Sandy Copeland.
Yes.
Sandy Swint.
Yes.
It's unanimously passed.
Well, thank you very much. Nominations for vice chair are now open.
I'll nominate Alan.
Are there other nominations? If not, we'll close the nominations. Could you take a roll call vote?
Yes, I will. When I call your name, please answer yes or no. Alan Stroh?
Yes.
Bob Smith?
Yes.
Janet Brennan?
Yes.
Jeff Davis?
Yes.
Sandy Copeland?
Yes.
Is that a yes?
Yes.
Thank you. Sandy Swint?
Yes.
Okay. It's unanimously passed.
Very good. Do you want to make a speech, Alan? All right, let's go on.
My greatest wish is that Janet attends every meeting. Thank you.
Okay, are there changes to the agenda?
No changes.
All right, now is the time for comments from the public on items not on the agenda. Do we have any comments from the public? Going on, accept and file the summary of actions for the advisory committee meeting of November 5th. Any discussion? If not, we accept and file the summary. Thank you, Sandy. Presentation on the air quality data, David Frisbee. David, you're muted. Okay. All right.
All right. Good afternoon. Can everybody see this?
Yes.
Okay, great. So, Dave Frisbee, planning and air monitoring manager here at the district. Want to provide you with the air monitoring summary for 2020. The district operates six permanent stations, air monitoring stations throughout the North Central Coast Air Basin, which is Monterey, San Benito, and Santa Cruz counties. And Santa Cruz, Salinas, Hollister, Carmel Valley, and King City, and a permanent station at the San Lorenzo Valley Middle School. All these stations, with the exception of San Lorenzo Valley Middle School, operate PM2.5 and ozone air monitoring equipment. The King City and Hollister stations operate additionally PM10 monitoring equipment. And up in the San Lorenzo Valley, we've got just the PM2.5, so the fine particles that we see in smoke. We also, from October through April, we operate an additional three air monitoring stations that measure PM2.5 as well. In the Pinnacles National Park, this air monitoring station is operated by the National Park Service. They operate it for visibility requirements that they have from federal law in national parks. Historically, this has been the highest concentrations of ozone that we've seen in the district. So our highest concentrations are right there out in this remote area. The contributions we get from our own region, emissions from our own region, as well as the Bay Area and the San Joaquin Valley contribute to higher concentrations out there. Also, it's hot and dry out there as well, which, and ozone is a photochemical pollutant. So it's generated in the presence of sunlight. These are examples of a couple of our stations in Carmel Valley and Salinas. They're modular buildings that house our equipment. The temperature inside the buildings are maintained within a certain range as a requirement of, to keep them within specifications. Here's some examples of the equipment we have out there. This is in Salinas. We have our instrument rack in the front. Doesn't look like much, but in the back you can see there's sample tubes that drawing samples from the outside air. And then processing it through several pieces of equipment to give us a pure sample that we can have consistently measured day in and day out. The standards that the district needs to meet are established by the state of California and national federal government. As you can see, for ozone, PM2.5 and PM10, there's standards for each of the agencies we've got, and then there's certain averaging times that we have to follow as far as meeting those standards. So you can see here, there's 90 parts per billion for a 1 hour average. That's a rolling average that we see throughout the year. California tends to have stricter standards than the federal government. We have for PM10, we've got 50 micrograms per cubic meter and 150 for the national standards. So quite a bit, a third of the amount that is allowed by national standards. So for the hourly peak ozone, you can look at this dashed line here. That's the state standard of 90 parts per billion. You can see for each of the air monitoring stations in the three counties, we've operated for the year within the standard. But when you average it over an 8 hour period, Santa Cruz and Monterey counties were both within the standard, but in San Benito County, especially at the Pinnacles, we were seeing exceedances of the state standard. On several 3 days in the latter part of last year. And that was likely due to hot, dry conditions, as well as the impact from wildfires that we were seeing at the tail end of the year, especially in August and September and October. PM2.5, the fine particles that you see in smoke, were the first half of the year when I came to you back in August, it all looked pretty good. At that time, we were starting to see the wildfires have impacts on the region. We had four fires. We had the River Fire, Dolan, Carmel Valley, and the Carmel Fire and the CZU complex, lightning complex fire up in Santa Cruz. So we were really inundated by a lot of smoke from those four local fires, as well as other fires outside of the area. So you can see here in August, here's the federal standard here for at 35 micrograms per cubic meter, and we shot way up almost to 400 micrograms per cubic meter for a 24-hour average. So it was a pretty heavy impact. And we saw the same in San Lorenzo Valley. We operate the seasonal monitors up until April through the end of April. And then the permanent monitoring station at the San Lorenzo Valley Middle School was still operating. And we saw similar concentrations at the same time as the other monitoring stations. When there's wildfire events, we'll put out an additional several monitors to make sure that we keep the public well informed of the impacts of smoke from the wildfires. So last year we put out a monitoring station at the MBAR office, here at the office, in Big Sur, and then down the Salinas Valley at Gonzales, Soledad, and Greenfield, and another one at Watsonville. And we were seeing elevated concentrations of PM2.5 from in those areas as well. For PM10, which is the larger particles that under still under 10 micrometers in size, that usually represents smoke, or I'm sorry, dust impacts on the monitoring stations. In King City and Hollister, we did see some impact from the wildfires as well. So that smaller component of PM2.5 on the air monitoring stations. But then as we got later in the year, we started to see that there was some dust impacts as well up into November. So as I came to you in November to talk about the attainment status for ozone, the state is still considering us to be in attainment for ozone for the past 3 years. So 17, 18, and 19. This year, we did see exceedances of the 8-hour standard as well as the as PM2.5. However, there's a process that we can apply for exceptional events. So getting an exception for those wildfires, which are natural events that weren't caused by industry or human activity in the area. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any of your questions.
Are there any questions from members?
I just had a quick one. When you showed your monitoring equipment and your tubes and that sort of thing, do you have any requirement for cleaning the equipment at some frequency? Just out of curiosity.
Yeah, there's a series of guidelines that we have to go by that the Air Resources Board and the EPA have designated for us. So we follow very strict cleaning and maintenance routines and calibration checks as well.
How often do you do that?
Every week we go to every station and run flow checks to make sure that the equipment's drawing at the same consistent rate. We do quarterly calibrations of the equipment. There's actually daily calibrations as well, but then there's more intense quarterly calibrations.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions? Okay, if not, we'll go on to the next agenda item. It's a received presentation on calendar year 2020 engineering and compliance activities.
Good afternoon. I'm Amy Climo. I'll be giving this presentation. Let me just get the slides. Okay, so I'm just going to give you a brief update on the activity and the engineering and compliance divisions for 2020. As you all are aware, COVID-19 pandemic hit us in March of last year. And so we made some adjustments to having staff work remotely. And then in order to get our inspectors back out in the field, we created some in-person inspections with some restrictions on not going indoors and doing inspections for facilities where they could spend the majority of their time outside and distance from the operator of that facility. So we did make adjustments once that happened last year so that we could continue to do inspections. So I'll just give a brief description of what staff and engineering do and what staff and compliance do, and then I'll give you a summary of our activities from last year. So the engineering side is where a piece of equipment starts, and it starts with an application, and the engineer will review that application and make sure that that equipment meets federal, state, and local regulations. Then we'll issue the permit with certain operating conditions to make sure that they stay in compliance with those regulations. Engineering also develops rules and regulations, and then We also do an annual emission inventory for stationary sources. So last year we received 349 permit applications, and all of these numbers are a little bit lower when you compare them to 2019, but not extremely lower. I'm happy to say that it seems like our activity on the engineering side has maintained similar to 2019. And I will also mention that in May of 2020, we did have one of our engineers left the district. So we've been operating with three permit engineers instead of four permit engineers. So that, in addition to COVID, that has had an impact on some of our activity levels as it relates to issuing, you know, authority to construct some permits to operate. So we've still issuing those authority to construct some permit to operate, 187 authorities to construct. And when a permit is issued, it's a two-step process. So the engineer reviews the application and they issue something called an authority to construct, which says, I've reviewed this equipment and it can meet the regulations. So now you can go install it. And then once it's been installed, we will go out and do a startup inspection and make sure that the equipment meets what they told us in the application, and then we'll issue that permit. And so last year we issued 276 permits. We just had one ag engine registration, one Title V permit update, and then one emission reduction credit transfer. And just an example of what are these units that we issue permits for. These are the main categories of permits. We continue to receive a lot of applications for emergency engines. So we have over 1,000 permits for emergency engines. We have 225 retail gas stations, 300 paint spray facilities, 208 boilers, and 147 prime engines. And this picture is is a diagram of the new Costco station that's going in Seaside. And we don't often get new gas stations installed these days, but the authority to construct was issued last year for this new station, and it should be opening this month in Seaside. So we will be issuing that permit later this year once they passed all their testing. So then on the compliance side, they take over once that permit to operate is issued. So the inspectors conduct inspections of the permitted sources, and they make sure that those facilities are meeting those conditions on the permit, whether it's record keeping or maintaining equipment to measure emissions. If they find that those sources are not following those permit conditions, then we will take enforcement action. We also have a small team that enforces the asbestos regulations, and that's a federal regulation for projects that are removing regulated asbestos containing material. And then we also respond to complaints from the public. So in compliance, we are also have one less inspector than we did in 2019. We had an inspector leave in December 2019, and we haven't filled that position. This last year, our activity numbers were down partially due to COVID and then partially due to having one less inspector than we had in 2019. But we were able to still get 1,454 inspections done. We issued 95 notices to comply, and those are a notice to a facility if they're not properly keeping their records. More administrative type of violations that we don't normally have to follow up with a penalty, but a notice of violation is something where we're issuing a source, a violation that has penalties associated with it. So we had 39 of those last year. We had 240 asbestos notifications, and those are for those projects that I mentioned where we enforce the federal regulation for asbestos materials. We did 213 asbestos inspections. We received 243 complaints, 21 breakdowns, and a breakdown is often happens, unfortunately, let's say that the power went out to one of the oil and gas facilities. And so they'll have to call in and say, our emission monitoring equipment is not working right now because the power is out. And so they're allowed to call this in as a breakdown. And then that gives them, they get a certain time period to correct that, or they may have to apply for a variance because they're no longer able to meet their permit conditions. We observe 9 source tests, and that's where a third party company will come out and test the emissions coming out of a stack at a facility. And so our inspectors will go out and observe those tests and make sure that those tests are done correctly. And then we issued 2 variances this past year. Just so you get an idea of the types of complaints we get, in 2020, the most common type of complaint we got was for odors. And second to that was smoke. And typically the smoke complaints are more related to smoke from a neighbor's chimney and then backyard burning. Those are the 2 most common complaints that we get on smoke. We got dust complaints. Those typically are when there's ag work done on a bare field that kicks up the dust that David showed you in his charts, that we do see exceedances of that PM10 standard. We got 9 complaints about asbestos, 9 other, and those range from, you know, find someone's calling and saying there's this person operating, they don't have a permit with you. And then we had 7 complaints against gas stations. So finally, this is just there are trends over the past 7 years back to 2013. And the very top blue dotted line is the number of permits. And so we're now creeping over 3,000. We have about 3,140 permits currently. The next line below the dashed blue line is the number of compliance inspections. You can see it's kind of fluctuated over time. And that is primarily due to staffing. Once we get a full load of having 6 inspectors, we're able to get more inspections done. And then we keep having this ebb and flow of having 5 or 6 inspectors. So that's had some impact on our activity levels. And then last year with COVID, we had a time period where we weren't able to go out and do inspections. But the bottom 3 lines, the complaints, the permits issued, and the permit applications received, you can kind of see it's a flat line. So that activity hasn't changed. It's a pretty constant workload of permit applications, issuing permits, and receiving complaints. So with that, I will take any questions.
I have a question about those odor complaints. Where are you getting the bulk of them? I mean, what source?
So there's a couple different sources. One is, we have a lot painting. So people will complain either, sometimes it's their neighbors painting a car in the driveway. Sometimes it's they live near an auto body shop and they can smell the paint. Sometimes it's odors from a compost operation or a landfill. So they do vary, but those are probably the top types of odor complaints.
Thank you.
Are there other questions?
Okay. Hi, Spencer here, and my apologies earlier. I clicked an attendee link, I think, instead of a panelist link, which is why I wasn't showing up. Just a quick question. I assume the reason that the number of total permits has risen only slightly is that some permits expire as new ones are granted?
Yeah, or some facilities shut down and they just closed their business. And then their permit goes away.
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Can you hear me?
All right. I have one question. Last year, there was questions about the cannabis odors. I'm wondering whether or not we're addressing that.
For cannabis odors, we typically refer that to the agency that's issued the license to grow cannabis. For example, Monterey County requires, as part of their cannabis growing ordinance, that they have to have an odor plan. So we feel like it's more appropriate for the county to enforce their odor requirements that are issued on that license to that facility, because we haven't issued anything to that facility. And then because cannabis is a crop, we cannot issue odor nuisance for agricultural operations. So the growing side of cannabis, we wouldn't be under state regulation, we wouldn't be allowed to issue an odor nuisance for the growing of cannabis.
Okay, thank you, Amy.
Are there other questions? Okay, if not, we'll go on to receive Richard's oral report, monthly oral report. Richard?
Hey, thanks, Chair and Vice Chair. Congratulations on your new assignment. Happy New Year, everybody. I'll try to be brief, but we're going to cover basically a couple months, which first is November 18th board meeting. They received a report evaluating the best available retrofit control technology, or BARCT rule, that we put together and ran past the advisory committee recommended adoption by the board. And that was that there would be no further action required to implement the BARCT rule for internal combustion engines. We had two facilities remaining and they really didn't have that much of an impact on our emission inventory. So that was basically it for that meeting. On December 16th, we had a number of presentations, and I don't know if Ann sent this out to the email, my report. Were you able to send that out to folks?
I did. I was out of the office, so I didn't see it till about 10 minutes before the meeting. So
that's right. So that, you know, if you don't have this, you should have it in your inbox. But we do have a number of outgoing board members this year, and some of those you may have been appointed by. So, for instance, Jane Parker has left. She represented Monterey County. She's replaced now by Wendy Root Askew, who will be taking her place. So I imagine things will be fairly smooth in transition. I did have a call with her the other day, as I am calling all the new board members. Fred Ledesma, the former mayor of Soledad, is no longer with the board. He was replaced by Michael Labar, who is the King City mayor. Honor Spencer with the city of Hollister is no longer there on our board. And she was a city council member. And Anthony Botello is a San Benito County supervisor, and he retired as well. So we have replacements for both Honor and Anthony. Also, staff was recognized for our longevity milestones. I think the important part here is that, you know, we have just, I think it was about 65 years of experience that we recognized. A couple of folks, Isabel Novoa and Scott Norton, have 30 years in each. And then we had three folks that had 5 years of experience. And so that's really great. We like to recognize these achievements. It's in increments of 5, 10, 15, 20 years, and then of course 30 years. We also, at that December 16th board meeting, the board adopted a resolution approving our 2021 diesel equipment engine replacement program policy and procedures manual. They also received and accepted our draft financial statements from our auditor. That's actually now final. So the auditor has made our audit final, and it was a very clean audit, no findings, which has been sort of the case since I've been here. Received a presentation on California's Air Resources Board proposal to designate the North Central Coast Air Basin to attainment for the state ozone standard. You heard David talk about that, so wanted board to obviously know about that. Adopted a resolution authorizing the Air Pollution Control Officer to execute a 5-year agreement with the California Department of Parks and Recreation to provide assistance with air quality monitoring up at the Hollister Hills State Vehicular Area. And David mentioned that monitoring site as well in his presentation. So those are the board actions. With respect to just district updates, you know, first and foremost, of all of you probably are aware, the district was received or underwent a ransomware attack. And so this was pretty tragic, although we managed to claw our way out of it using backup files and the competency of our IT consultant. But basically we received a demand. We never knew how much money they wanted, but we had to log into a website to find that out. And after they corrupted all our data, we couldn't even use our computers. So we were able to rebuild our system. We moved a lot of our stuff to the cloud now. So we're no longer relying on our security measures to thwart off these types of attacks. So it should be a lot more, it should be safer in the cloud. And so we had to contact all the people that we thought might have been had data disclosed. So if you received a stipend and you were on we're cutting your check or 1099, there might have been some data there. There may have been some driver's license numbers for some folks that were on our records, but we really don't know. They say they copied everything, but it's doubtful that they could. I mean, they weren't in that long to be able to copy the terabytes of information we had. So we contacted the FBI, the county sheriff, and something called the Northern California Regional Intelligence Center, which I didn't know existed. And we didn't really get much reaction from the FBI initially. And I can say that to this day too. They wanted to see a copy of all our infected drives, which we did. And we put it on a device for their benefit. And they kept on saying they were gonna come by and pick it up. And that's been like a couple of months now. So I'm thinking they're not really interested, but this is a ransomware problem that is being headed up by the FBI, the investigation in Boston. So they're trying to coordinate with a lot of folks that have been attacked all over the nation. The most troubling point about this is I and a number of other staff had received phone calls, personal phone calls at home on our personal cell phones saying that we needed to comply with the ransomware request. Otherwise, there would be trouble for the district as well as the individual employee. And that sort of goes a little bit above and beyond what you typically see with these types of attacks. So we've learned a lot from this, and we've hopefully plugged all the avenues of exposure. But you know, we'll say it again, all it takes is one click by an employee on a phishing type of document, and you can let somebody into your system. So we're gonna be doing a lot of additional training for staff to make sure that doesn't occur. So in engineering, we've been working, I think, pretty successfully with the California Air Resources Board on their new criteria and toxics reporting regulation. They pretty much met a lot of our comments and demands for change on the regulation, which I think will make it better to implement. And this deals with emissions inventory and guidance for how that toxics information as well as the criteria is processed. Compliance has been responding, as maybe Amy said, to an increased number of chimney smoke complaints now that temperatures have dropped. So we take a educational approach first and send out letters explaining why it's not good to burn wood that's not seasoned and to be aware that you don't want to dampen your stove down at night and so forth. So the complaints have come from all over the jurisdiction, not just the Santa Cruz area where we experience a really significant problem in some of the valley areas. Planning and air monitoring. So this is good news, bad news. The good news is we've exhausted all of our funds for the Monterey Bay Electric Vehicle Incentive Program. The bad news is that we've exhausted all our funds for the Monterey Bay Electric Vehicle Incentive Program. And this year we actually had more money in the pot, about $500,000. with this amount, we were able to incentivize the purchase of lease of 244 electric vehicles, and a small portion of those were low income, because you could also get an incentive amount for a used electric vehicle, which is sort of rare in this world. So we are looking for additional funds to maybe hold us over until our new fiscal year starts in July. And the Monterey Bay Community Power, or 3CE as they're currently known, is interested in perhaps giving us some additional funds to fund us through the end of our year. So that would be really nice if we could do that. It just shows that, you know, more people are really getting involved in purchasing or leasing EVs. And then sort of coincidentally, GM just made an announcement yesterday or the day before that they're going to be offering only electric vehicles by 2035. So their whole model line will be electric. And that's pretty much a game changer. I mean, that's a long ways off in the term of industry, but we'll see what happens. And that sort of coincides with California's plan, right, to only allow the purchase or lease of electric vehicles in that year as well. This year's wood stove change-out program is continuing. The program offers up to $1,500 to replace a non-certified wood stove or open hearth fireplace with a new natural gas propane, wood pellet, or EPA-certified wood stove or electric heater. And then low-income applicants can receive an additional $2,000 on top of that. And this is available to folks throughout our three-county jurisdiction. We initially opened it up to disadvantaged communities and low-income areas. We didn't really receive a huge response there, but that's understandable because a lot of folks that are low-income don't own their home and don't have control over what's being installed for heating in their rental. Staff have been issuing diesel engine and equipment replacement grant agreements, which includes Carl Moyer Community Air Protection, NOx Remediation, and Farmer Programs. These are programs that and incentives that are for replacement of old dirty off-road equipment, such as tractors, with new cleaner burning equipment. Tractors have recently been delivered to Mark Pura Ranch, Steinbeck County Produce, JV Farms, Strauss Leasing, and Three Generosos LLC. Awards are based on the highest annual emission reduction and projects proximity to disadvantaged communities or low-income areas. Our San Lorenzo Valley Seasonally Monitoring Network is being installed It was being installed at the time of the report to the board. So we're up and running there, and that's to detect elevated wintertime concentrations of wood smoke from fireplaces and chimneys in the San Lorenzo Valley area. Coincident with that, we launched our Spare the Air program. And when a Spare the Air alert has been declared, residents of the San Lorenzo Valley are asked to voluntarily use a source other than wood to heat their home. And this program runs from fall through the winter, similar to our monitoring. On the EV vehicle front, two new electric vehicle DC fast charging stations have been energized and are now available to the public at Target stores in Marina and Hollister. The stations were installed by ChargePoint, which is a contractor under our Plug in Monterey Bay grant program. And so far we've got about 6 DC fast charging stations and 64 level 2 charging stations that we've installed under this program throughout our three county jurisdiction. And I believe Soledad is up next to receive one of these DC fast chargers. So we're trying to make a dent. As we get out more cars, we're also trying to get the infrastructure set up for that as well. And then just on outreach, we had a really good article in the Monterey Herald on wood stoves and what people could do to reduce emissions. We've got Spanish language ads on KLOK radio for wood stove changeout program. outreach materials were shared with Breathe California, and they held a Breathe of a Life walk. It was a virtual walk, so get your exercise on Zoom. And then we've had a KSBW air quality index video that was running to explain that to the public. And then finally, it's probably not outreach, but we did recognize the contribution of Tom Brokaw for his 18 years on the advisor committee. And he gives his regards to this committee, and he may stop by someday to see how we're doing. But we did give him one of our ceremonial cutting boards that recognizes contributions and dedications over those 18 years. So that's my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there questions from the committee? No questions? So if not—
Sorry, I'm sorry. I have a quick one. Who's the IT consultant?
It's Monterey Bay Technologies, and Yabu Zatila is his name.
And everybody feels confident that they're equipped to deal with a threat of this scope, and the move to the cloud has solved the security vulnerability?
Yes. Part of the issue is that we've, over the years, under his services, we've migrated from a fairly insubstantial system to mostly Microsoft Office products. I mean, when I first came here, we were using GroupWise and Microsoft Word, which was not the standard of the industry at the time. So we ended up getting a number of really expensive servers to run a lot of our databases and applications. And we found, for instance, like Microsoft Office now, 365, we're on that. It's on the cloud. So it takes the servers are no longer on our site and people can't get in. We think they may have actually gotten in through our in and out board. We have a web-based in and out board that shows where people are, whether they're in or out of the office. And it's great for the receptionist who can monitor people and where they are, especially when phone calls come in. That was pre-COVID. I mean, now it's pretty much a lot of people are out, but I guess that was situated on our server. And the password for that wasn't extremely challenging, so they may have gotten in from there. And once they're into the server, they actually got into some of our backup files too. And we know this because they encrypted everything. And so that was the biggest deal, is that we couldn't access anything. And one of the most frustrating aspects was when I called the FBI, that they said, go online to file a complaint if you have any kind of cybersecurity issue. And I couldn't go online. Yeah. Use my phone to make a complaint online. So it was pretty devastating, I got to tell you. So it took us about a week to get everything back up and running, and maybe a little longer. We had to work directly with Microsoft to migrate from our server over to their 365 cloud system. So it was challenging technically, but Yavuz is really good at his job. He actually runs IT for a number of special districts throughout the region. And it was ironic. I think a couple of days before I talked to him about this, you know, the ransomware, and said, you know, are we protected? And he felt we were pretty secure, but yeah, look how that happened. And the other thing I found out is a lot of school districts are getting hit up by ransomware attacks, and they actually hire negotiators to sit down with the ransomware attackers and negotiate how much of a ransom they're going to pay, which I thought was really
good. It's very common, and it's terrible, because if they succeed in encrypting your stuff, you're often helpless. It doesn't matter, you know, how much you don't want to pay. Your choice is you're out of business or you pay.
Right.
And and people often don't appreciate that something like this web tool you're describing, the rest of the system could be secure, but sometimes people freelance solutions like this thinking, oh, I know how to build a web page, and don't realize they're opening up a gigantic vulnerability, and how easy it is to crack passwords and all the rest of it.
Are there other questions? Okay, if not, future agenda items.
I had a suggestion. I, you know, given your report on the electric cars and vehicles. And I know Toyota just came out with announcing that it surprised everybody, I guess, that they have this new battery, solid state battery, that's supposed to double the mileage. And there's a lot of advancements going on. Tesla had their battery month last September. I was just wondering if it's possible for some kind of projection of how this is all going to impact, the electric world in terms of preventing pollution in the future, and how it specifically would affect if these advancements come. I have a feeling we're going to get inundated with electric cars, because they're going to become the standard in a few years in terms of vehicles sold. And the other interest I had was some of the advancements. They haven't come out with a lot of that stuff yet, but big rig trucks, semi-truck, electric trucks, pickup trucks, all heavy-duty stuff.
What are you recommending as a...
Well, I was just wondering if it would be possible, because I know you have some very knowledgeable staff, because we've talked outside the meeting before. If you could give some kind of projection that's relevant to the agency of where all this is going, maybe, and how it's going to affect the agency.
Okay, thank you.
Just a thought.
Are there other recommendations? I have no comments. Are there comments from committee members? Okay, if not, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Sandy didn't move throughout the entire meeting. I didn't have to do that.
It's a talent.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
So long.